So today is the last Sunday of Epiphany. The last Sunday of Epiphany. And the last Sunday of Epiphany is always Transfiguration Sunday. It's interesting because as we move out from the season of Pentecost to start the new year, it's Christ the King Sunday. And that's the Sunday before Advent begins. And the second hinge pin in the Christian calendar is this, the Transfiguration Sunday, that moves us from the season of Advent and Christmas and Epiphany into the Great Lent, as the Orthodox Church calls it, or the Lenten season, or the season of Lent. There's lots of ways it's referred to. But Transfiguration Sunday brings us to the culmination of the Epiphany of Christ. This is who he is. Advent starts in darkness. The world is still hoping, right? That's our understanding in the scriptures. We walk through the scriptures. The world was still waiting for the Messiah in the Old Testament. The promises of the prophets are read during the Advent season. And we're looking to the Christ to come. And by the time that we celebrate Christmas Eve or Christmas service, whichever it is, Christ's candle is lit. It means that Christ is here. He has been born. His birth is here. The Messiah is here. And then through Christmastide, we learn of this one who is the Messiah. And then through Epiphany, there is revelation after revelation after revelation who he is. And so then it culminates here in Epiphany on Transfiguration Sunday, the Sunday in which we remember Jesus's transfiguration and transformation right before his disciples on the mountaintop. And if you were listening, you would have noticed that our reading, our New Testament reading from Peter, is Peter testifying as being a witness, bearing witness 30 years after Jesus' death, as he's writing to the church, he's bearing witness to being one of those three on top of that mountain of Tabor and seeing this transfiguration. That's what that Second Peter 1, 16 to 21 is all about. Peter bearing witness. The Exodus reading was all about Moses ascending to the mountain and receiving the law and staying there 40 days. And coming down, and the glory of God, he had been in his presence. The glory of God had so penetrated him, his face had been transformed. To the point that he covered it. So what are you getting at, Pastor? There should be something happening when we're in his presence. If nothing is happening within us, we've got to begin to ask, why not? Why not? Why am I still struggling with the same sin that I've been beset with for 20, 30 years? Why can't I get free? What is going on? It's about being transformed from the inside out. Too much of this world has brought us into focusing on self-help gurus, self-help books. Even much of the Christian writers, a lot of their books now will be found in the self-help section instead of the religious section. We don't need to help the self. It needs to be crucified. And the only way the new life comes is if we allow it to die. Right? The Christian life is not just about Jesus' death and resurrection. It's about our ongoing death and resurrection. Our ongoing death of the old world and the resurrection of the new world, the new creation within us and the world around us. And it's interesting because Epiphany and Lent back right up to one another. And Wednesday is Ash Wednesday. I'm not doing a full service, but we will be doing about 10 minutes, 15 minutes at the beginning. Those of you who are not going to be in attendance, I say go outside and either get some dirt or make some ashes if you want, whatever, some way to mark yourself. Because we're going to do that together. But we're still going to do it, but I don't want to stop the study. And we have 2 to 3 people joining now, maybe up to 4, if they all show up, that are not here at the church. And only being on the study 2 weeks, I don't want to stop. So we're going to combine it real quick. It's still going to be sacred. It's still going to be holy because it's about how we show up. Right? We're the holy vessels. And if we don't believe that it's sacred and holy, it won't be. So I had begun to say, so we're preparing for Lent. Wednesday, Lent starts, and it's like it just rode up on us. Like, seriously, I just feel like I have not even been helping you guys prepare. But we've also, this will be our 4th Lenten journey. Maybe not for all of you. So we kind of know what's to expect. It's not new. What are we going to offer up to him? And we want to think about that, but I'm going to share some things we also need to keep in light of that giving up. But this is all going to be aimed to prepping and preparing us to walk through Lent. Hopefully in a way we've never experienced it before. That's my hope. So Epiphany is a season of revelation, and it climaxes in the transfiguration of Christ. This opens the door for us to walk through Lent into a deeper darkness. Advent starts in the dark. Transfiguration actually ends in a shadow, as God has to overshadow Peter, James, and John. And then a Lenten journey leads us onward until we come to the ultimate darkness. That's why we gather on Good Friday and go through our service of shadows until we're left in darkness and hear the gravestone close. And why we sit in somber remembrance, holding vigil. And we will do that again here this Holy Saturday at Church of the King, holding vigil as we wait for Sunday morning. Because even though the work of, and here's the thing, God is light, but so much of his work is done in the dark. Not because he's in the dark, but because the only way that darkness is overcome is by light. The only way hate is overcome is by love. And so, what do you mean, Pastor? God starts the incarnation in the dark womb of a woman. Jesus walks the earth. And he dies under the shadow of the sky. The whole sun disappeared. It became dark. The work of the cross was done in the darkness. Jesus is laid in a dark tomb in utter darkness, descends, according to the creeds, into hell, whatever that is, and sets the captives free. All of this is happening in the dark. And the work of God is proven at the dawn. Because when the light comes up, God has already done the work. The tomb's already empty before the dawn of day comes. God isn't afraid of our darkness. We're ashamed. We fear it. We wonder how dark our darkness is. But beloveds, the testimony of God is that he does his greatest works in darkness. Because he is light. And whatever is darkened, our understanding, our soul, our spirit, whatever is darkened, it can't hide it from God. He's saying, if you give it to me, no matter how dark it is, I will work light and I will work life. Why? Because darkness is pregnant with hope, because there's nowhere God isn't. Where can I leave your presence, David said? Where can I escape you? If I'm laying in my deathbed, if I'm laying in the place of death, I can't escape you, because even death can't keep God out. Now look, that ought to give you a lot of hope when it comes to some of our children, grandchildren, family members, right? What's going on? God's not afraid of the dark. Because he made a determination that he knew when sin came, darkness was going to try to hide everything. So he said, okay, that's fine. I'm going to enter it all. Culminating with entering our very dark and fallen flesh. Not that his was when he took it on, but when he was on that cross, he took all of it. He took all of it on. So for God, for us as believers, we have to understand that wherever even darkness is, God is, and it's pregnant with hope and with love and with uncreated light, no matter how dark it is. Every dark nation, we talk about nations being dark because of demons and worshiping all of those things, but grace is already there. There's no place grace isn't. It's how we've been taught to think about how God is. But we need to think about God differently. No matter how demonically strapped we think a nation is, God's working there. Because there's nowhere he won't go. We won't go. We'll run. But not. He's already there working. His grace is already there working. Because God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. It's already given. Grace is already given. There's no stopping it. There's no pulling it back. It's already out there. It's already present. But do we know where Jesus is, where he's moving, and are we going with him? And so it's important for us to know as we prepare for Lent that this Transfiguration Sunday reminds us Lent is not just about discipline. It's not just about giving something up. It's not just about laying down a bad habit or hoping to form a new habit. It's not just about the money that you give in the forms of alms. It's not just about any extra service that you do during this season. All of those things are attached to something for God. Why? Because they're attached to something for us. Where my treasure is, my heart is. What do you love? What are you attached to? That is what it's about. For God, it's all when we're giving these things up, there's a goal for it. And that's our own transfiguration. As we move from Transfiguration Sunday, it is this whole Lenten walk is about being transformed. It's all about transfiguration. It's all about following Jesus to the cross. Why? Because that's the ultimate place we are all transformed. We go from sinner to saint at the cross. It is the place of our greatest transformation. But the cross is not something that was in the past. The cross is something that lies ahead of us as disciples at all times. Why? Reminding us that the way to life is death. And if I want to live differently, holy, righteously, sin-free, it's through the cross. Not one time, but every time I've got to die to something. Every time that I got to lay something down, there's a part of self that has to die. Less of me and more of him. It is this goal of Lent is our own transformation from death to life, from glory to glory, from hope to hope. Because the radiant, uncreated life that shined on Tabor will also illume Golgotha and also illumes us today in the 21st century. On Transfiguration Sunday, 2026, 2,000 years. After Jesus stood on that mountain. Our passage today is Matthew 17, 1 to 9. Matthew 17, verses 1 through 9. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John, his brother, and led them up on a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his garments became as white as light. And behold, Moses and Elijah appeared to them, talking with him. Now, before I move to the next passage, imagine what's going on here. Use your sanctified imagination and picture being one of the three disciples. And Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it's good for us to be here. If you wish, I'll make three tabernacles here, one for you and one for Moses and one for Elijah." And while he was still speaking, a bright cloud overshadowed him. And behold, a voice out of the cloud said, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." And when the disciples heard this, they fell face down to the ground and were terrified. And Jesus came to them and touched them and said, "Get up, don't be afraid." And lifting up their eyes, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. And as they were coming down from the mountain, Jesus commanded them, saying, "Tell the vision to no one until the Son of Man has risen from the dead." Tell no one until the Son of Man is risen from the dead. What's happening with Jesus? Have you ever stopped to just think, what's actually happening at that moment before Peter talks? What's happening with Jesus? Is the Father doing something? Is it like a light beam that's coming out of heaven and shining on them? Is the Holy Spirit doing something? Is there some new quality or power that's suddenly manifesting in Jesus' life? What's actually happening with Jesus? Have you ever given that any thought? What are some of your thoughts? Jesus goes from Jesus, their rabbi, to a light bulb. So what's happening to Jesus? Okay. Change. Preparation. Transformed. He's what? Yes, he is revealing who he is. There's nothing added. God's not doing anything here. The Spirit's not doing anything here. Not that they're not present, because he's three in one. But this is Jesus in human flesh revealing who he really is. And that is one of the things we have to remember. He's revealing who he really is. The transfiguration reveals who Christ truly is. Why is that important for us? Why is that important for us as we start the journey of following Jesus through Lent and ultimately to his death and resurrection and then into the raising up of the church? Why does this become important to us? It's so that we might become who we truly are, who we were created to be. Because Jesus is the only truly authentic human who lived like a human his entire life, the way God had designed him to. Not just carrying God's image, but carrying God's likeness from the day he was born until the day they put him to death. The great medieval theologian Thomas Aquinas says this about the transfiguration. What is going on with Jesus? The glory of Jesus' soul suddenly, miraculously, pours out into his body and overflowed it. and revealed his divinity. In the words of St. Thomas of Damascus, Christ is transfigured not by putting on something, not by adding a quality he did not possess previously, nor by changing into something he never was before, but by revealing to his disciples what he truly is, God in flesh. In opening their eyes and in giving sight to those who were blind, for while remaining identical to what he had been before, he appeared to the disciples in his splendor. He is indeed true God, true light, the radiance of glory, end quote. Y'all can't tell me that these early church fathers didn't know God a lot better than our church fathers now. He is true light of true light. He's God from God, light from light, true God from true God. We just read it in the Nicene. That is part of where they get that quote from, is the transfiguration. It's pretty amazing. Because this light that is emanating from Jesus, this glory that is coming out of him without effort, it's just who he is. It's not light as we know it either. It's not the sun rays that we see. It's not the incandescent bulbs we put in our lamps. It's not the LEDs or the halogen bulbs on our... It's not that kind of light. It's uncreated light. It is. The lights of this world, the sun, they're given as signs that point to the kind of light that God is. It's a light like no other. Completely uncreated light. St. Gregory Palamas, the 14th century bishop and theologian, helps us here. The mysterious light, inaccessible, immaterial, uncreated, deifying, eternal, this radiance of the divine nature, this glory of the divinity, this beauty of the heavenly kingdom is at once accessible to our senses and yet still transcends it. Therefore, the voices of the past, these doctors of the church, the patristic fathers, these voices of the past, they're helping us to see that the transfiguration for a moment allowed Peter, James, and John to behold the very essence of God. That's what he is. He's light, but not light like the sun. Light. They saw for a moment the signs of his sheer, altogether otherness. So when I say he's utterly other, they got to see some of that. They got to experience some of that. It's not like a spotlight turned on from heaven. This is the divine life of God shining through human flesh. And let me slow down and say that again. This is the divine life of God flowing through human flesh. What have we been made partakers of? What if we as believers been made partakers of? We have been made partakers of, Paul says, the divine nature. We as believers are partakers of the divine nature. This is the divine nature of Jesus flowing through human flesh. What am I getting to? If we really are sitting in the presence, if we really are being filled with his presence, where is the radiance? Where is the joy of our salvation? Where is the incandescent, radiant illumination of his life in us? If the human flesh can't handle it, that's what it came down to. When Jesus spilled out his divine nature. Yeah, so if we see this as his divine life shining out through human flesh, then we can connect that that's what was going on with Moses. Right? Moses, it says that he came out of the presence and his face was radiant. Why? Because he had been in the essence of God for so long, it had penetrated him. Now, I get we don't have those testimonies all through the scriptures, but I think we can at least look at this in its representation and say, where are the Christians with the radiance of the life of God just emanating out of them because they can't help it? Because there's so much of the divine life in them, it just oozes out through our flesh. It's not about us trying to find the right words, it's just simply being. Because we have been with him, that it just flows out. It can't help but flow out. That's what was happening to Jesus. Now, for a minute, try to picture being one of the disciples. Sanctify your imagination and just allow the Spirit to paint this image on your imagination. That Jesus is so radiant. And it's just coming out of him. Moses' face was so brilliant. Now, he was a sinful man in the presence, but his face was so radiant, they couldn't look upon him. They had to look away. Well, they said the only reason he covered it was why? Because it was fading. Moses didn't want to see. Paul tells us that he covered it because Moses didn't want him to see it fading. He didn't want to see the glory fading. The light pours out of Jesus from within. Imagine. Allow the Spirit to just behold for a moment the Son with Elijah and Moses consumed in the uncreated light, in the beauty of pure light. No radiation. No UV rays. Pure light. Pure white light. Radiating out of his presence. And being able to behold that. The Son of Man just, it is literally like a light bulb from the inside out. His essence, his being, his otherness transformed everything it touched. Because remember, he's pouring out into his flesh. God is pouring himself out into his flesh so that even his skin is glowing from the light. But so are his clothes. The eminence of God outside of him is so powerful, so strong, so pure, nothing that it touches is unchanged by the light. Nothing. So radiant, reality shifts. And the prophets who have been dead for thousands of years are alive on Mount Tabor with Jesus because the radiant light of the Word and the Spirit breaks through time and brings it on the Mount Tabor. This is the God we serve. He can shatter even reality if it need be. He changes everything. In his presence. Wonder working power. His essence, his being, his otherness. On either side of him. Fully alive. Moses. Elijah. this moment, this historical moment, God is breaking into the earth like never before. Like we've heard about the cloud, we've heard about the Shekinah, we've heard about Moses carrying that glory in him down. We've heard about God splitting this and doing that. We've heard the testimony, but right here in this moment, God is breaking through his created order, rending not only the heavens, but the very fabrics of the world itself, and releasing the light and the essence of who he is into the world, and Big Mouth Peter steps up. In this miraculous moment, like so many of us, silence, we don't know what to do. We can't sit in it. Something amazing is happening. The first thing is, I doubt it. You know, a miracle is in progress. Prove it. We speak before we should. And a lot of us are getting in the presence of God, and our nature is speaking. Our sin is speaking. Our conscience is speaking. Our inner voices are speaking. Our protectors are speaking. And what we got to do is shut up in the presence of the uncreated light. To settle down into the darkness and let it overshadow us so that the uncreated light can recreate who we are from the inside out. But the first thing Peter wants to do, I've seen the glory. First thing he wants to do is what? Build something. He speaks, but he wants to build something. Instead of allowing there to be what it is, a movement of God, Peter wants to build a monument. Peter wants to dedicate something, and let's just camp out here. Let's just stay here. Let's build a tabernacle. I'm going to build it for you. I'm going to build one for you, Jesus, Elijah, and for Moses. It's good that we're here because I got a plan. If this ain't our humanity, think about it. Slow down to the speed of the text. This is us every day. God says, this is what you're struggling with. Oh, God, I got a plan. Right? God shows us something. Oh, I'm going to take this to pastor because we got to do this right now. We go to a meeting. The prophet prophesies. You're a prophet of God going to the nations. Hey, pastor, the prophet said, I'm a prophet ready to go to nations. Send me. Okay, are you being formed? Have you got a spiritual relationship with God? I mean, I get the gifts are without repentance, but have you been formed in Christ? What you going to carry to the world? Americanized Christianity? You going to go dump on a third world nation our prosperity gospel? Right? What are you going to do? God speaks. We're supposed to be quiet. We got to get still. We got to follow the light. But no, let's build. The Spirit's there. Pastor, we got to build. We need to expand. That's the first thing we want to do. The Spirit of God falls. We had a thing here one time where it was just for 3 or 4 weeks in a row where we had the craziest glory moments when I first stepped into pastoring. Gold dust showed up on plants and walls. Not like you would see in a lot of places where there are flags and it falls over. It was on the underside of plants. Not the top. Underneath. And when you go by them, the gold dust would fall on the floor. There was one wall over there that was like a big S shape of gold. And that was it. Except for then 3 weeks, rainbow dust fell on me. And every time I'd get in my car, you would see this tiniest looking like almost glitter. But it was so tiny you could not pick it up all over my clothes. And it would just disappear. Like it didn't wash out. By the time I went home, it was gone. I don't know what happened, but I wasn't trying to recreate it. But the moment that we posted pictures, it stopped. True story. Pictures are still on my Facebook and Melody's. Oh, no, Melody's Facebook's gone, but it was on our Facebooks, and it stopped. We had a day where we were up here praying, and the fragrance of the Lord was so strong that a couple people tried to come up to me to get prayer, and they were out before they even got near me. They went out in the spirit Am I telling the truth? Right? Belinda, Steve, you guys were there. Right? And so these are the I've experienced things like that all the time. But the first thing I want to do is go run and tell somebody. Because this is how you come. Come see the miracles. Come watch God perform for me. And you say, now if I had said that, y'all would be like, that's heresy. You don't even love God talking like that. But that's what we do. Come watch what God does for me and not for your church. Come look and see what God's doing at my church and not your church. Right? And I'm not saying that God doesn't want us to know. I'm saying that blasting it on social media the way that I did was sin. Took me a good 10 years to figure that out. But at that time, everybody was telling me God had this great ministry and all this stuff I was supposed to be doing. And that just seemed to be part of the course because that's what everybody else had done that got famous, church famous. God led me to repent from all of that many years later. But I believe that that is what he wants to do through all of us, with all of us. But Peter has to speak into that holy moment. Oh, yeah, Peter is always putting his foot in it. Always. Lord, it is good for us to be here. That's the language. I love it. It's good for us to be here, Lord. You don't know how good it is for you, God, and the eminent Elijah and Moses that me is here. You are so lucky I'm here. Oh, my goodness. Like, think about it. We read over that and don't pay any attention. Like, this is how important Peter was to Peter. This really is how important Peter was to Peter. Oh, boy, it's good that I was here. Let us build you a tabernacle with three. Peter wants to build something. He wants to preserve that moment. What he really wants to do is manage the glory. He wants to touch what no man should touch. He wants to do something. And that's exactly what we do. We do it all the time. We get in quiet time, and we should just be sitting in silence. I shouldn't say should, but if we go back and we read our celebration of disciplines, if you go and you read the readings of people like Madame Guyon or St. Teresa of Avila, or you go and you read St. Bernard of Clairvaux, and you read these writings of Christian mystics that say there's no we have no business trying to build the kingdom out there when we have not dealt with the kingdom inside. When we have not built the citadel of Christ within us. How much of the Spirit of God can we build when our walls are broken down like a deserted castle within? Where everything runs in and out and comes and claims what it wants and goes out. And then we give it permission and say, well, that's okay. I'll just repent. Or I can't help it. I can't stop doing this. I can't stop eating this. I can't stop this. And then it's just like, I give up. And then we let those little foxes come in and spoil the vines. And we never see the fruit of what we do endeavor because we don't protect what we're endeavoring to do. Because we don't know how to build the citadel within. We don't know how to build the wall around the garden of our heart. We don't know how to protect the fruit the Spirit's producing. And so over these next 40 days, we're going to be doing You Are What You Love, and hopefully you're reading it slowly and chewing on it. And I'm hoping also that you begin to pick up your celebration of disciplines and only read the first four chapters. meditation, prayer, study, and fasting. Because that's what this whole 40 days is going to be about. Slow down to the speed of the text. Read it slowly. There's a quote by somebody you don't know. Look them up. Look the quote up on Google. Ask ChatGPT. Because it's saying more than most of us think. We're reading over things we're not seeing. And I saw proof of this because one of the things I'm having to do in one of my classes is go back through Celebration of Disciplines. Well, this is probably the fifth or sixth time that I've had to go through this book through the years. And it's interesting because almost all the time I focused on the last two thirds where it says learn to pray in Celebration of Disciplines, the prayer section. And this time, almost all my highlighting and notes come in the first third before learning to pray. Why? Because it's exactly where God has me. It's not so much about me learning how to intercede for others. What I really need is to learn how to manage my inner life. And that first third of the book, that's what it's about. Dealing with our affections, dealing with those things that are mapping our heart, those passions, those desires that we're talking about, and you are what you love, those loves that are disoriented. Because the way that the church understood sin at work was sin was dis-ease or disease, right? And part of what happened is you become distorted. Your mind, your will, your emotions, they get distorted. They get perverted. They are out of order and out of alignment with the will of God. We're seeking the good. We're seeking the knowledge of the good, the tree of good and evil, instead of seeking the life of God. And so everything is out of order. And so what we have to do, be transformed from the inside out, is to bring all of those things that are out of order in alignment with God, in alignment with Christ. And so we have to bring those things in submission to Him and right order our passions, or our passions run our life. What's mapping us, our passion for God or our passion for everything else? What is mapping our life ahead? See, it's not about what we do. When we should be silent, we speak.